It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Tonight at the Carnegie Library Music Hall in Homestead, Drew Carey brings his stand-up comedy show to fans in the Steel City. While he's been hosting The Price is Right since 2007, when longtime host Bob Barker retired, Mr. Carey is better known to a lot of us as the star of the long-running ABC sitcom The Drew Carey Show, which ran from 1995 to 2004, and the improv sketch show Whose Line Is It Anyway, on which he was host and producer. The success of that show led to the creation of Drew Carey's Improv All-Stars, an improv troupe that still performs around the country. And he hits the stage in Homestead tonight at 8 and joins us now by phone. Drew Carey, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Yeah, and I enjoyed your segment on the, I was listening to the end of your last segment about the JFK thing. The Oswald character on the Drew Carey Show was named Oswald Lee Harvey. That was her little joke about his name.
Well, you know,
isn't that weird?
It is weird. And this is, you know, I was going to ask you, on a day like today, when you're coming in to do stand-up and you've got a lot of people thinking about and talking about the JFK assassination because this is the 50th anniversary, on such a somber occasion, is there a particular challenge to making people laugh on a day like today?
No, I've been walking around today. I don't think people are extra sad. I mean, people reflect on it, but it's not. No, I think it'll be fine.
Now,
I mean, I realize it's in the papers a lot and people are talking about it, but there's bad news in the paper every single day. You know what I mean? There's always if you take everything that's in the paper and internalize it, you'll never go out and stand up because people will just be like torturously sad like all day long.
Now, of course, you're from Cleveland, and it's well known that you are a huge Cleveland Browns fan. So you've picked an interesting weekend to show up in Pittsburgh, my friend.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, the Browns have no hope this year, so I'm not really worried about it. As long as, you know, it's not much of a rivalry when your both teams are out of it.
Well, not quite. You know, there's still a chance.
Yeah, hey, man, we're out of it. Let's be real. I know what people say on the news to sell tickets, and I know what people say to try to get people to watch the TV shows and watch the game, but we're both out of it. Let's get realistic.
Well, with all that you've accomplished in your career and as host of The Price is Right, I'm wondering why you still enjoy going on the road and doing stand-up comedy.
I don't know. You know, I find it makes my time on The Price is Right better. Makes me a better game show host, and the game show thing makes me a better stand-up comic. It's just something I really like doing. I always like doing. I missed doing when I wasn't doing it. And I don't know, it's like an itch I have to scratch all the time to get up on stage and do stand-up. There's nothing like being in front of a crowd. Like, most of the work I do, I realized, is in front of small crowds, even when they're televised. Like, Price is Right, we have like 300-some people in the audience. Whose Line, we had 300-some people in the audience. The Drew Carey Show, we had, you know, just a couple hundred people in the audience. All these things I've done that are like big TV shows are actually just me in front of a couple hundred people in an audience. It's a very comfortable place for me to be, you know, in small theaters and clubs doing stand-up comedy. And I just really enjoy it. It's kind of a natural thing for me. I hate to give it up.
We're talking with comedian and television game show host Drew Carey. If you have a comment or question, you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. The email address, esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Drew, you had a rather circuitous route to stand-up comedy. A lot of people may not realize that you were in the Marines for a while.
Yeah, I was in the reserves. I tried not to make a big... I mean, I'm proud that I was in the Marine Corps, but I don't want to make that big of a deal out of it. I kept the commies out of Ohio during the 1980s. That was my big... my big contribution. And it all went well for the Battle of Overland, and then it kind of fell. But yeah, I mean, I didn't start doing stand-up until I was in my late 20s, and I was one of those people that didn't know what they wanted to do with their life for a long time. And, you know, I had one odd job after the other, you know, waited tables, sold stuff over the phone, waited tables again, waited tables at another place. It was like one of those things where I would just have a job just to pay bills. And then I just kind of fell into doing stand-up comedy, and that was the first time I ever had a career. And that was, I think it was like 28, 29 when I started doing stand-up. So that was pretty late in life. All my other friends had college degrees, families. You know, they were all on their way to doing things. And I was like this outlier. And it was just, you know, it took me a while to figure out what I wanted to do. Still don't know. I still change jobs all the time.
Well, how did you get your start doing stand-up? You say you fell into it, but, I mean, you had to have had some sort of direction or maybe a push?
I tried doing stand-up a little bit when I was in college just to see what it was like. Like, they had open mic nights and things like that. And I wasn't very good at it, and so I stopped. And then a friend of mine who was a radio DJ at the time, he was living in Connecticut, actually. I met him in Cleveland. He was living in Connecticut, and I was having a hard time at work at this place I was waiting tables in Cleveland, and I was worried about extra money, and I called him, and I was telling him about my troubles, and he said, well, you know, if you think of any jokes for my radio show, I'll pay you. I was like, oh, really? How much will you pay me? And he said, I'll give you $10 or $15 a joke. So I thought I could make like an extra $100 a week if I just thought of some jokes for this guy, but I had no idea about how to write jokes. Before, I tried to just think of them in my head, you know, during the day, which is like the worst way to do any kind of writing. So I went to the Cleveland Public Library and got a book on joke writing. I couldn't believe I found one. I didn't know there was such a thing, but I thought I'd just have a stab at it. I started looking the card catalog, and I found a book on joke writing, and I went, oh, my God, there's a book on this. And I got it, and it really opened my eyes to like these different writing techniques. And I bought other books, you know, after that. But after I learned these tricks to writing jokes, I started writing jokes for my friend, and he liked them. And then that was around, like, November, October that year. And then in January, I decided that was going to be my New Year's resolution, was to try to do stand-up comedy again with this new skill that I had. So the very first amateur night in Cleveland that I could find that year in January, I went and I started doing stand-up again. And I won that amateur night, and then I started coming back, and that was it. By the end of the summer, I was doing it full-time.
We're talking with Drew Carey, and our number 412-246-2002. Let's go to Donald in Munn Hall, not far from where Mr. Carey will be performing tonight. Donald, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you, and I'd like to extend a heartfelt welcome to Drew Carey.
Thanks, Donald. I don't get that a lot in Pittsburgh, so thanks.
Drew, I was just wondering, I've read about you, a big fan, of course, and I was wondering, do you get any of your humor, or do you take any cuts from when you served in the United States Marine Corps, and tell us a little bit about your service?
Well, I used to have a joke about it, that I joined the Marines because I was sick of my old man telling me what to do, but I thought I'd be my own man and start out on my own. But, you know, whatever was that funny, and I don't strike people on stage as Marine Corps type, you know. Even earlier with the haircut and the glasses, you know, I was never, like, you know, really super muscular, like, military looking. So I never really mentioned it much. And I really enjoyed my time. I was a radio operator. That was my job. I got it. My biggest thing I did when I was in the Marines is I got a perfect score on my physical fitness test one time, which is shocking to people. You know, I started out being famous when I was so fat and out of shape. But yeah, you had to do 20 pull-ups, 80 sit-ups in 2 minutes, and then you had to run 3 miles in under 18 minutes. That was like the best shape I was ever in my life.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was my big deal when I was in the Marine Corps. And I got out as a sergeant.
Donald, thank you for that phone call. Drew, I read that your father died when you were just 8 years old, and you were the youngest of three boys, and because there was a large gap between you and your older brothers, you spent a lot of time alone and entertained yourself, or at least one of the ways that you entertained yourself was listening to comedy records. Which comedians did you listen to?
Bill Cosby, Flip Wilson when I was a kid. I would buy books, like joke books at the bookstore. Like, I remember there was this joke book I had, 2,000 Insults for All Occasions, it was called. it was all these one-liners. Like, I had a chapter on, like, fat jokes, skinny jokes, ugly jokes, you know, you're so ugly that, you know, she's so fat, all these kind of jokes like that. And then there was, like, this guy that had this series of joke books, you know, the official Italian joke book, the official Polish joke book, the official Irish joke book. I used to buy all those. I would buy, like, I really read, like, comic book pages, but, like, remember Andy Capp used to be in the funny pages.
Sure.
I remember Andy Kaff used to be, I used to like Andy Kaff, so I would buy like books of his, like any of those like collections of syndicated daily cartoon strips that I could get at the bookstore, at the library I would get. I just ate it up. And any morning DJ that told jokes, I would memorize the jokes from listening to the morning DJ in the morning and tell them at school, you know, when I got to school. I was one of those guys that always had a collection of jokes in my head just because I just, you know, tore them up. And then later on when I was older, it was all like, you know, George Carlin and people like that. But definitely Bill Cosby for sure. I used to have memorized word for word all his early comedy albums.
Have you ever told him that?
I never got to meet him. Believe it or not.
Well, there's still time.
Yeah, I got to shake his hand once. He hosted a show that I was on, that NBC had when I was on NBC, and he introduced all the comics. So I had a chance to say hello to him backstage and shake his hand. And, you know, I never got a chance to, like, sit down and talk to him or anything. I'm sure he knows that every comic alive used to listen to his albums or stuff. I'm sure he's well aware.
We have Don on the line from Mount Washington. Don, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with Drew Carey.
Drew, how are you doing?
Hi, how's it going, Don?
All right. Hey, you still taking pictures?
Not as much as I used to. For a while there, when I was kind of retired for a while, and I started doing photography, and I just took pictures of soccer games because I just wanted to get. I honestly just wanted to be on the
sideline.
Soccer
games out at Chelsea, DC United, down in DC. I didn't realize you were there until halfway through the match.
I would love to take pictures more because I love going to games. I love sitting on the sidelines. But now I own part of a soccer team in Seattle called the Seattle Sounders that does really well. And now if I want to, I can just go there and watch them sit on the sidelines as much as I want. And if I, you know, I'm in with the U.S. national team, so if I want to get a sideline pass to a U.S. national team game, I can. So now I can just go to these games and sit on the sidelines if I want without taking pictures and working for it. So I like the scam I have going isn't viable anymore, and taking pictures was a lot of work, and I liked it artistically, and it was really fulfilling for me, but I can't do it unless I do it all the time, because it's one of those skills where if you don't do it a lot and do it often, it just kind of fades away, and it would take me a good few months to get back to speed and get back to, and I was just, you know, average. I mean, I was professional, but I wasn't like a great sports photographer. I was an average sports photographer, a professional sports photographer, but not a great one. And just it would take me, you know, months to get back to even being that. And, you know, a couple of years, I think, to get any kind of greatness in me if I had it. So, I think about it all the time. But most of my camera equipment is stuck in the garage collecting dust.
We're talking with Drew Carey, photographer and comedian, who is appearing in Pittsburgh tonight at the Carnegie Music Hall in Homestead. And Don, thank you for that phone call, by the way. I wanted to go back to your first appearance on the old Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, because I think I was watching that particular night, and he really liked your stuff. What was that experience like?
It's like being saved by Jesus. It was like I was washed in the blood of the Lamb. That's what it was like. I used to belong to a Pentecostal church when I was in junior high and high school, and it's the closest thing that I can think of to the day I got saved. You know, when people belong to a Pentecostal church or an evangelical church, there's like this big day when they get, you know, they have an altar call and they go up and they say, oh, that's the day I got saved by Jesus. And they talk about this like tingling they get in their body, and sometimes people talk in tongues, and they have this really serious emotional physical reaction to this event. And it was like that. It's the closest I can think. It was like I felt like a tingle in my body. I felt like it was like an out-of-body, like a true out-of-body experience, where when I walked over to the desk, it was almost like I was floating across the stage to get to Johnny's desk. When I was doing my set, it's almost like I wasn't real, like I wasn't there. And, you know, I was so in the moment of, it's called flow. If you have ever had guests on to talk about being in a moment of flow where you're just, like everything else shuts off. Like a lot of athletes talk about it when they're playing a game and about to catch a big pass. Like there's no crowd noise. There's no other people on the field. It's just them and the ball. you know, and you have these kind of weird moments where your concentration is so hyped up, and that's what it was like when I was on the Tonight Show that day. And then the rest of the day was just like magical. I went to the Improv that night, and the Improv Comedy Club on Melrose in L.A. is this, you know, famous comedy club there, and that was kind of my home club in L.A. And I went there, and there was a tradition there to show the people's first Tonight Show set in the bar. So everybody was eating and, you know, dining, and they shut up all the music, they turned on the TV so everybody could watch my first Tonight Show set. There was just like this big round of applause when I got done, and the owner, Bud Friedman, sent over a bottle of champagne, and these comics that I admired so much I could barely say hello to, they were, to me, they were so great, like, were coming over to my table and shaking my hand and tell me how much they liked me and how great it was. It was just like I got, like, a coming out party for me in comedy. It was like one of the greatest days of my life.
And then by the mid-90s, you had the successful sitcom, The Drew Carey Show, which would run on ABC for a decade. And we opened this segment with the song 5 O'Clock World, which was part of an elaborate production number that opened your show. How did song and dance numbers they were great, by the way, amazing to watch. How did those song and dance numbers become a part of your show?
I was on a show right after they did the Tonight Show. I had a development deal at Disney that fell through. It was a terrible experience. I thought, well, I'm never going to do another one of these again. And then a friend of mine who had the same managers that I did was doing his own show at Disney. And I like swore up and down I was never going to do anything else again for Disney Television or Disney. And he was doing a pilot, and he needed somebody to play his best friend. And they told me how much it was to do the pilot. And I thought, oh, my God, that's a lot of money. You can get a lot of money doing a television pilot, so at least you could. And I thought, oh, yeah, I could use that money. And I honestly, I just did it for pilot money, and I did this show with my friend, and it got picked up. And I was like, oh, hey, I'm going to be on, I'm going to be this guy's best friend, I guess. That's going to be my career, working for Disney, you know, on NBC. That's the show I was on when I met Bill Cosby. And that show got canceled really quickly. And then after that, because of some people I met on that show, I got another job as a writer on another sitcom that got canceled. And I worked for that for a short time. And then out of that, I met some another guy that helped me develop the Drew Carey Show. It was just this really torturous road from like failure, minor success, cancellation, failure, and then I finally got my own show.
And it was a great show, and it did very well in the ratings, at least early on. And but I read where you were frustrated at having to deal with censors and being unable to employ the off-color humor that, you know, was in your stand-up routines. Explain.
Well, we were always frustrated with the censor rules, and a lot of it seemed silly. Like the guy was we call them censors, but they're called the guy that was on our show. He was the standards and practices guy. So it's not like they're actual censors. It's just that, I mean, to be fair to them, it's just that each network has their own standards and their own practices, and, you know, because they're trying to sell to a certain segment of America. So it's this guy's responsibility to make sure everybody, you know, adheres to those standards and practices. So I don't know. You call them censors as a shorthand, but I hate to use it in a pejorative way. You know what I mean? It wasn't like they were bad guys. They were just trying to do a job, and there's a good reason why these things exist. But we thought it was silly sometimes. Like we had a scene where we were going to do a takeoff from the movie Full Monty. It's about these average guys that take off male stripping to pay some bills. Mm-hmm. So we were doing an episode about that, and there was a scene at the end where we all do a little dance at the city council meeting, and at the end we rip off our boxer shorts and throw them in the air, and there's a shot of us from behind, and it was going to show our butt crack. And ABC had a rule then, one of their standards and practices rules was that you couldn't show any butt crack before 10 o'clock. They could do it on NYPD Blue, and they had a couple times, which was on the air at that time, and they showed people's butt cracks on NYPD Blue and near nudity on NYPD Blue, but because I was on at before 10 o'clock, we couldn't show any butt cracks, so we had to do this elaborate thing where we put microphone stands in the foreground to block the view of our butt crack, and it was like this extra thing, and I was just like, this is stupid that they're going to let us, you know, just because we're on a half hour later. So it was like frustrating things like that, And what we used to do, and what sitcoms still do, what writers still do, is we used to overload our script with like naughty words, like damns or hells or like whatever word that you wanted to put in that you think you couldn't get away with on TV. And they would allow you to do like three of them or four of them or a couple of them, but not no more than that. So we would put in 10, you know, in the script, or 12. And just make them say, okay, cut this down to, instead of three, then we get five. You say, it's too many, cut it in half. Then we get two extra. And we would always do that. And they, I think he knew we were doing it, and, you know, we always did. It was just like this game that goes on. But it was frustrating because it would be better just to be honest and put in what we wanted and get it. But instead, every week, we had to, like, come up with this game to play. Like, how are we going to work around these stupid rules that somebody put in place? A lot of these rules seem stupid to us. Although I realize, you know, why they had them. You know, they have every right to control what goes on in the air, what they're selling to the advertisers, you know.
We're talking with Drew Carey, our guest here on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We have, Drew, just less than a minute left. Obviously, The Price is Right is going well for you. What is the next challenge?
I think the stand-up act. You know, the stand-up act is actually great right now. I think I'm doing some of the best stand-up I've ever done in my life. So I'm really, really proud of the act I put together. And but it's like a full-time job to do it well. So it's almost like I have two full-time jobs, and I'm trying to marry, keep my time together. There's a lot of time traveling, a lot of weekends gone that you could be with your family or with your kid that you're not. So I'm trying to reconcile all that stuff together. I think that's the biggest challenge I'm going to have right now. Even though the act is going really well and I'm, you know, plenty funny doing stand-up, I just think, man, to keep it going and to keep it fresh and to grow it and get more time, that's going to be the hardest thing.
And you can catch Drew Carey's act tonight at the Carnegie Library Music Hall in Homestead. He hits the stage at 8, and Drew Carey has been our guest. Drew, it has been a pleasure talking with you. Thanks so much for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul. Nice having you. Thanks. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. And that will do it for today's Essential Pittsburgh. Thanks for listening to the show on 90.5 WESA. You can catch the entire show online at WESA.FM or as a podcast in iTunes. And we welcome your comments and story ideas at ESSPGH at WESA.FM. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Have a great weekend, everybody.